Once again, we're in the Zurich home of Guido von Arx. That's his civil name. His spiritual name is Goralila Dasa. The subject today is the law of karma. We've all heard this term. We've seen it in movies. We've read about it in books. We've heard it somewhere. What is karma?
Karma is a Sanskrit word and actually means an activity or an action which brings a result or the reaction of an action.
Now, this sounds very simple. We think in terms of the scientific law of action and reaction. For every action, there's an opposite but equal reaction. Is this indeed related?
It is related. However, with the law of karma, it also goes on the more subtle level. Thoughts which you think, activities which you do, they may be very complex, sophisticated, maybe very simple, but there will be a reaction. The complicated thing with the reaction is it's not always instant. It may come later. But for this reason, we must remember that it has actually a remote cause with an action done much before.
It has a delayed reaction. You basically just said this. I think of something biblical. So as you sow, so shall you reap. This is really karma, isn't it, in other terms?
Some people quote the Bible in order to verify or support the karma law. I would say the main subject or the main reason for expressing the law of karma is that we are responsible for all our activities. In the Bhagavad Gita, which is one of those Vedic ancient Indian texts, which talks, among other things, also about the law of karma, Lord Krishna explains it's actually a very complicated subject matter because it's not so simple and logical the way we see it. But to repeat it, the main aspect of the law of karma is that we are aware that for every activity and even thought we have, we are responsible, and sooner or later the reaction may come.
In other words, this is the aspect of free will. God gives us free will, and so we have a choice to do good or bad with it. And thus, we reap our karma, good and bad.
That's how we see it, yes.
Are we born with karma?
Yeah, otherwise without karma, we cannot function in this world. Everyone has certain talents, has a certain nature, which comes along with the birth. However, these certain karmic reactions are not always fully manifested yet. They may be in a more subtle or a more subconscious level, they may be in a seed level, not yet fructified, not yet matured, but they are there. Otherwise, the individuality, which is a combination of an individual choice, but also of our karmic burden, so to say, in some cases maybe more light, in other cases more heavy, we are born with.
Where did we get this karma from? From another life?
Karma without the aspect of reincarnation actually doesn't make sense, because not all the reactions we either experience or get in this lifetime are coming from this lifetime. That someone is born, whether he's American, Swiss, or from India, or anywhere in the world, female or male, is not a chance according to the law of karma, but is actually a reaction.
Just on this point, is it our karma to be human? Or a rabbit, or a dog, or a lion? Is that part of karma?
Yes, there is something very specific about the human form of life. Only in the human form of life, you're actually creating new karma. When you're a dog or a rabbit, you're actually living out your previous karma. You're living according to your nature if you're a dog or a rabbit, whatever. You have a dog, you bite. That's a nature, at least, of certain kind of dogs when they're in threat or in danger. They react in that way and they don't create new karma. However, as a human being, the responsibility is there and you create new karma, and according to that, you'll be living in the future a new life. We could say in simplified terms that the presence is a result of our previous actions of the past, and the future will be a result of our present actions.
But I've heard that it's possible for a human to create or to accumulate so much bad karma that in the next life, that person will not be a human again. It may even come as a lower form. I've also heard that certain animals can actually eventually reincarnate through accumulation of good karma. How an animal can do this, I'm not sure, and come back as a human being. I mean, is this just hearsay or is there something to it?
I'm quoting the Vedic understanding, from ancient India, the way I understood it. I'm not claiming, of course, to know the absolute truth. For me, it makes perfect sense. The first part of what you heard is actually right. It's not so much just a question of so-called accumulating bad karma, but it's a question if you not behave like a human being, which also brings along certain social behaving elements, but you actually live like an animal. You know, let's say, eat like a pig, sleep like a bear, or whatever, have sex like a pigeon, I don't know, then you might become one animal like that in the next life.
Is it that simple?
It's a question of consciousness. According to the Vedas, at the moment of death, it's kind of an accumulation of all your thoughts and desires, and the conscious you have will actually determine your next birth. So people who live a pious life throughout their life, generally also when they have to go, when they pass away, when they die, they can take it with more leisure, with more faith in the Lord. They can detach themselves more easier. They leave, so to say, their temporary earthly life and prepare themselves for the next life. Whereas those who have accumulated activities, thoughts, desires which are more animalistic, nature would not give them again a human body because they will simply create disturbance in society. So for those kinds of souls who have been in a previously in a human body, the nature will give them an animal body where they won't create so much havoc in society.
But it's not possible for an animal to eventually accumulate so much good karma that they come back as a human. This you don't believe.
I said before that animals don't create a new karma. However, animals go through an evolution. The evolution of which we heard from Darwin and other in that line is only partially true. The evolution actually takes place of the soul. The soul transmigrates through different bodies and eventually comes in a human form of life, where there is a chance to either remain human, if they behave like a human, go back in an animal form from where they come from, or go in a higher human level, so to say, maybe like angels or demigods or higher living entities who have more power than human beings, but they're on a more subtle level, they're on higher dimensions, we generally can't view them, or, which is the goal of everyone who's believing in some kind of spiritual science or religion, whether they believe in reincarnation is not, actually to go out of the circle of birth and death and retain the eternal form, which means back to the kingdom of God.
Well, the two, the law of karma and reincarnation, are intimately related. And of course, reincarnation is a separate subject, which is also available. We'll be getting into that separately. But I want to follow up on this. Are you suggesting or saying that Darwin's theory of evolution really is compatible with Vedic science?
If you just limit it to the human body, it started with nothing and then from dust, some simple cells evolved and gradually more complex forms, and then the human body, that's totally wrong. But the soul goes, according to the Vedic understanding, from the original spiritual position, where by misusing the independence and freedom, comes into the material world and starts in a very, very simple form. And from that evolves through simple forms to more complex forms and gradually in the human form. And there again, as I said, you can, if you compare it with a bank account, you can accumulate different kind of either debts or wealth on your bank account, and then after death, this will be considered when you get the new form.
Well, let's go into the issues of good and bad karma. How can we accumulate good karma?
By doing good deeds. It's in one sense very simple, which means for the welfare of others. Of course, the ego element may be there. Someone likes himself and takes care very well of himself and thinks he creates good karma. Or he expands the ego a little bit and thinks, well, I'm taking mainly care of my family to make sure my kids have a good life, but others I don't really care. If you really are after good karma, which means pious karma, you're concerned for the welfare of everyone, whether the living entity may be human or even animal, may be high class, respected. You may get a lot of award for your so-called pious activity or may not get award. That's not the element. Krishna, again, in the Gita a little bit explains that these pious activities or good activities are also categorized in three gunas, they're called, three elements of binding a human being. If you do activities which you may be thinking are good, let's say, give maybe a very pragmatical example, I invite you to join me in a drug party. You're invited, it's free, you can smoke with me, I don't know, opium or whatever. That you can say it's nice because you invite people and together you have a good time. However, the activities you do are actually self-destructive. So that's a so-called good activity in the mode of ignorance. When I do so-called good activities, but with the goal and ambition to become famous and respected, I make sure there are 20 TV cameras around when I feed a hungry person and 50 journalists write about it, and I get a confirmation that I did it, I spent time and money to help the poor. That's a pious activity in the mode of passion, with the desire to get, you know, a reward and accept it. And the actual pious activity is you do good where it's needed and don't care whether you get respect or reward for it.
You do it selflessly, without you detach yourself from it. You do it simply because it must be done, and you feel compassion for those receiving it.
That's the perfect word saying it, yeah.
Let's get a little risky here and translate this into the political spectrum. I've heard it said sometimes that Jesus Christ was the world's first socialist. Are you saying in political terms that a very aggressive, selfish, conservative, right-wing capitalist is not accumulating as much good karma, or is not accumulating any good karma at all by his activities, whereas a genuine, selflessly motivated socialist will be accumulating good karma? Can one translate it into politics?
I have personally difficulty with it. Maybe I haven't dealt enough with politics, but the main problem with politics is always those party thinking. You know, I believe my party is better than your party, and I, of course, bring so many arguments why my party is supposed to be better. But you can bring the law of karma on a more social, if you want, political level. One should not forget that the goal of karma is not this separation or this dualism or polarism between good and bad or good and bad parties, however, to transcend actually. Because the purer you are with your thoughts and your deeds, the more the karma is not binding you. According to the Vedas, even good karma is bad because it binds you. It can make you proud. It makes you maybe very self-comfortable with the situation. You accumulated wealth, good health, maybe some respect, and you enjoy that. And you forget, through to that good karma, that you have a healthy body and have respect in society, that you will die. And this is also temporary, because one day your accumulation on your bank account of good karma will be empty, unless you do, of course, more karma. But the binding element of karma is it's still a law. So the transcendentalists actually wants to go beyond good and bad karma, which is then done when you're really acting with love and without any attachment to the result. And for the pleasure of the Supreme.
In Roman Catholicism, you go to the priest, confess your sins, and you like to feel as though you've received absolution. In other words, you have been freed of your bad karma. It's not that simple in Vedic science, is it? How can we get rid of our bad karma? Can we get rid of our bad karma? Wipe it away.
The question has been asked before. Actually, when you look at Vedic literature, it's mainly questions and answers. And some people were wondering, let's say criminal people or people with an evil mind, even though sometimes they feel bad, they do certain activities in order to reconciliate their so-called bad karmic activities, still they carry on. Because it's part of their nature. They like to steal, they like to do this and that. So what, in order to get rid of so-called bad karma, is actually you have to work on your nature. You can say of the more internal qualities of your characteristics. And for that, purification is helpful, certain austerities is helpful, maybe certain good activities, pious activities is helpful to help the poor. But ultimately, according to the Vedas, if you take shelter of the Supreme Lord and allow yourself to be guided by Him and not by your personal motivations, which seem to be generally very egoistically supported, it's very hard to get rid of bad karma. What you can do ultimately is try to change your consciousness. The reactions, you don't know, because you don't know the future. how much it will come back on you regarding suffering and all that, you don't know. The Vedas say you have to learn to tolerate sukha and dukkha, happiness and pain, or you can say good karma and bad karma, like you have to tolerate summer and winter. They come on their own. Summer is coming and of course we feel happy. Winter is coming, maybe a little bit more cold and more discomfortable. But as a civilized human being, you have to learn to tolerate them. There's a big subject matter in the Vedic text, how you deal with difficult situations, with pain, with unwanted situations. And there is the transcendental element coming in, that when you're not getting too much happy, when there is so-called good karma coming, and too much disturbed and too much frustrated when so-called bad karma is striking you, but go beyond it. Not that you become indifferent, but you just watch it. It's a very interesting scene you can always watch, watching yourself. How do we react in different situations? When we get angry, when we get frustrated, when we get nasty because something doesn't turn out the way we want. Or we can just accept that as part of nature, as a karmic reactions, and try to make the best out of a bad bargain.
If something awful happens to us, we lose a loved one, we smash our car, we lose all of our money, or we fall ill, or some such thing like this, are we being punished for our bad karma? Is this a result of bad karma directly?
That's one way to look at it. A more intelligent, I would maybe say a more spiritual way at it is, there is a lesson which I have to learn, and by the grace of God it is given to me. Maybe I should have even deserved much more, but by the kindness of the Lord I just got part of that reaction. And what can I learn from it? When a loved one dies, or our money is stolen from us, what is the lesson we have to learn? And I would say it's quite simple. We have to learn to become more detached, but not give up the love for the person.
So even if something seems bad, it always offers us a chance to grow or to produce good karma, as it were. Bad things may be the result of our negative actions and bad karma, but we get a chance to make it right.
The problem is just when we are in that bad situation and suffer, let's say, consequences.
We don't realize it.
We don't realize it. But it's something we have to train ourselves, that even in those hopeless moments, there is light if we want to. And we are here to learn. Of course, we will be happy to be here to have fun. But I think ultimately our main purpose of being here is to learn. Learn from our mistakes, learn to improve our situation, and detach ourselves from things which are temporary. Because everything which is temporary one day will go. Whether it's an object, whether it's a human being, whether it's a material element, it is temporary. And everyone who's with people who have to pass away or in the process of dying knows that the more one is detached, the easier and more comfortable that final test or the final lesson can be to those who remain attached.
What happens if we walk in the woods, turn to the heavens, raise our hands in prayer and say, please take away my bad karma? What happens?
It's up to the will of the Lord, the sweet will of the Lord, to take the bad karma away. But the question should be, why? Why do we want to get rid of our bad karma so I can enjoy more and my enjoyment is not hindered by any bad karma, which might still be there? Ultimately, the Lord wants us to be, of course, happy, but happy with the right consciousness and the right understanding of the situation. And in order to understand things, generally we, being graduates of the school of hard knots, often have to learn through suffering. I know in my life, certain lessons I wouldn't have learned, although theoretically I heard so much before about it, unless I had to go through it and suffer it, and then by practical experience that this is bad, I could realize it's useless. So bad karma is often more the mercy of the Lord than good karma.
But we have to learn to look at it as another chance. It's a gift, really. And how can we learn, how can we find out what we have to do? The chance is given. We may be in suffering for some reason. We say to ourselves, I'm suffering for a reason, but this is a chance to learn, a chance to grow, a chance to improve myself, a chance to generate good karma. What do we have to do then? Do we have to open ourselves, ask for guidance, or will we be shown automatically what the options are?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, the greatest gift we can have is knowledge. And he specifically wanted Arjuna not to act based on either ignorance, fanatism or sentimentalism. If we just ask for guidance, we may not be aware of the information or knowledge required before we can allow ourselves to be guided, because we might be guided by someone else. We never know. So we should cultivate...
You mean a demonic force, for example?
If we open ourselves and are not very clear and maybe also not able to differentiate, because even if we know about Jesus, the devil was presenting himself in a very alluring, promising way. And for people who are conditioned and like respect and honor and power, they would think, wow, that sounds very good. I can get the kingdom of the earth, whatever. So knowledge is actually the clue. And knowledge means, the definition of knowledge according to the Vedas is the ability to differentiate what is good for me and what is bad for me. First comes knowledge. And if knowledge is culminated and knowledge is developed, then whatever happenings come to you will be easier to be understood, because differentiation is there. This is something for my good, and they reacted now according to knowledge, not according to sentiments or whimsical or in a fanatical way.
But we have to acquire this knowledge somehow. And let's say we're not there yet, and we desire to make the proper decision. We're not afraid of making a decision. We just want to feel, to be convinced that this is Krishna's will, that we ask for guidance in this sense, the inner voice or whatever we want to call it, the intuition. Can this be done? Does this happen?
It can happen for maybe some very, very simple, pious soul. That is enough. I would say, at least in my lifetime, I use my time to develop my brain, my understanding, my knowledge. I study books, for instance, the Bhagavad Gita and other books, which help me to give a more deeper understanding of a situation than maybe just if it's from the emotional aspect. I know that beyond the intelligence is the heart and the soul. And if someone has real access to the soul, then he may not need the study of books and all that, these aspects. However, we can often not differentiate between our more fanatical or sentimental or emotional side. That's why for that purpose, knowledge, wisdom is good. As Krishna calls it, the greatest gift we can have is buddhi. That's a Sanskrit word which means knowledge. And from knowledge, when you experience it, wisdom develops. And what you experience, no one can take away from you. No one can brainwash you anymore. So that's actually what is ultimately required from theoretical knowledge, which we develop through study of the right source, of course, not to any tabloid press, but books which help us to differentiate the philosophical approach of things, philosophical understanding. In Sanskrit, it is called the Chatushloki. You see things through the eyes of the scriptures. It's not just the emotional, personal side, but you see through a philosophical eye, through a scriptural eye.
We human beings are the only species blessed with the ability to think, to study, to learn, to grow intellectually. And choice, whatever you choose, making a decision to do whatever you do, results from your knowledge of Vedic science, for example, of your knowledge of what is sin, what is sinful, what is not sinful activity. So that's it. That's why we have these choices, and that's why we have this variable karma, as you describe it. Only we can determine. That's that element of free will that we always hear in great religions. We have the free will, and people say, well, why does God let this happen? Well, he's not letting it happen. We brought it on ourselves. This is basically it. We have that free choice. We have decisions we can make. But through learning and education and intelligence growth, or intellectual growth, our decisions will be more and more accurate, and hopefully will be better informed and will bring us better and better karma. Would you agree with that summation?
Yes, but as I said, our goal is not to have better karma, because better karma will again bind us. But a developed human being has the ability to differentiate and actually is acting and willing more and more in the line of the Lord. That's ultimately a question. Some people try to develop spiritually without taking the help of the Lord. It's kind of a joke, I would consider. Here we are already in our material concept of life, where we have been struggling with our ego. Now I want to get rid of the ego. Now we think we can do that without actually approaching the original source of knowledge and help and mercy and love, God. So that wouldn't go as far. To sum it up, someone who's approaching and actually able to allow himself to be guided by the Lord, he's able to transcend both good and bad karma, which is the goal.
One issue, we look around the world, we see trouble spots, we see suffering, we see war. It always seems to be the same parts of the world. Is there such a thing as collective karma, where people with the similar karma all tend to live together in one country or one region of the world, where one place is like living in paradise, another is like living in hell? Does this have to do with karma?
It very much looks like the term collective karma exists. However, we shouldn't judge people and say, well, that's just because of their previous sinful activities and now have to suffer war and calamities and natural catastrophes. Our purpose and our duty is to help wherever, however we can, not considering that's their karma. We consider it our karma when we suffer, knowing that due to some previous activities we have to suffer now and are not bitter on chance or God or the other bad human beings who may be caused externally that suffering. However, when we have a chance to help others, it's always our duty to help, otherwise we cause bad karma for us. So it looks like, but I don't really want to judge what happens in certain countries where it may be again and again wars and calamities are happening. It's very unfortunate. If I can directly help, I should. If I cannot directly intervene and help, I should as much as possible send them my very best wishes and prayers so they can improve their life and ultimately become happy without good and bad karma.
But something we also know from the biblical studies, he who lives by the sword dies by the sword. If someone suffers a violent death, is murdered, is run over, a terrible accident, is this a result of particularly bad karma in this individual?
Well, look at Jesus Christ. He suffered a terrible death. Mahatma Gandhi suffered a terrible death. Sometimes God, as himself or whatever, directly his hands into the whole subject matter. I wouldn't go as far. Unfortunately, one knows heavy deaths, unnatural deaths are not easy. It's also difficult for the soul to transmigrate afterwards directly into a new form after this very terrible form of dying. It's unfortunate. I would leave it there.
We don't really understand karma. It's so complex, it's really beyond us to fully understand.
It's so complex because there's always the free will, and there's a combination of many, many individuals, plus there is also the Lord who may have his hands into it. He may leave us if he misuses our freedom, which he gives us, and then cause different bad activities to others, maybe war, etc., will happen. That's a misuse of the freedom of the Lord, but sometimes he intervenes. So, as I said, when something happens to us, it's intelligence to accept it as our karmic reaction. When something happens to others, we should try the best to help them.
As we've heard, our karma directly has an influence on our next life, our reincarnation. That's the subject that we'll deal with elsewhere. Guido von Arx, Gaurilila Dasa, thank you very much.
Thank you also.